Turner Entertainment Networks proudly present the world's first 24-hour cartoon network.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the world's first and only cartoon network, the home of the top toon stars.
Welcome to Checkered Childhood, a classic Cartoon Network podcast covering many, many years of Cartoon Network's history.
I'm Funky. I'm Fresh.
Not now, boy. I'm busy. Tonight's the third night.
Greetings, Toonheads. It's your cartoon companion, Brett, also known as B-Dubs. We're about to embark on a journey through our checkered childhood, a place filled with colorful cartoons from original, syndicated, and reclaimed origins. Whether you are a seasoned vet glued to your television since the channel's formative days, or recently got into Cartoon Network's backlog on streaming over on Max, I've got you covered with everything you could possibly want to learn about this quirky little channel, marked by black and white checkered squares. Each episode, we'll explore shows through various formats across different eras of classic Cartoon Network. No topic is taboo, so I invite everyone and anyone interested in listening to participate. Who knows what our mutual passion for cartoons will unearth for this buried TV treasure? Maybe some joy, something new for you to learn, or just a trip through Nostalgia Lane, if nothing else. All right, now that we're past introductions, let's travel back to the past, all the way to the very beginning, when the channel began. The year is 1992. Bill Clinton had just won the election against George Bush Sr., becoming the 42nd president of the United States, while surfing the internet became a household catchphrase, and everyone flocked to the opening of the Mall of America, the largest mall opening at the time. Media mogul Ted Turner had just purchased the entire animation library of cartoons from Hanna-Barbera a year before at a cost of $320 million. And he was eager to put his newly acquired collection to use, too. Rather than permanently lump the cartoon content into his previously launched channel, the Turner Network Television, aka TNT, which was formed in 1988, he felt it more appropriate to give the cartoons their own home, though he did test the waters first with Cartoon Network programming block on TNT first. It didn't quite have the explosive results one would expect, though. But despite this, Turner was still determined to put his massive mound of cartoons to work. With the boatload of classic cartoons acquired from various movie companies, what is a multimillionaire media mogul to do? He needs to brand his content and somehow make it better than animation blocks on rival channels like Disney, Nickelodeon, and Fox Kids, who were quickly gaining attention of young viewers through their fresh, edgy content full of attitude. By joining forces with the appointed TNT president Betty Cohen and Mike Laszlo from TBS Superstation, another Turner channel, Ted Turner launched the Cartoon Network on October 1st, 1992 at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. When devising the idea for the 24-hour animation focus channel, Turner mentioned at the live launch event to an eager crowd,
"There's kids in all of us, or kid in all of us, and these cartoons and this channel are for everybody here and later around the world."
Once the checkered flag was raised high above the Atlanta, Georgia studio, Cartoon Network officially powered on its network, jam-packed with an astounding library of 8,500 hours of Toonerific entertainment across 183 acquired series, which were all loosely organized into various programming blocks themed around the specific cartoon content itself. Just a small helping of the programming blocks, I'll rattle a few off for you so you get an idea of what was on at the time. There was Down With Droopy D, focused on Tex Avery's lovable Droopy cartoons, of course with a hip-hop spin on the advertising. That was all the rage back then. There was also Bugs and Daffy Tonight, which centers on Looney Tunes' most iconic characters, presenting them as framed, picture-perfect memories in Bugs and Daffy's dressing room. Very, very classic and reserved feeling. There's also Boomerang, which was reserved for the flat graphic cartoons of the 1960s that really popped with color and served to reel in an older demographic who grew up with these on early models of TVs. And we also had Late Night in Black and White, which featured older black and white cartoons from the 1930s. My personal favorite, Toonheads, was a block featuring three cartoon shorts from many 1940s cartoons, with some trivia about the shorts bookending the cartoons before and after commercial breaks. It's a bit similar to Superchunk, but with a different flavor. Don't worry, we'll go more in depth into these programming blocks in future episodes of this podcast. So what makes this channel so special in such a competitive network space? Cartoons aren't exactly a novel idea, as evidenced by Disney's multimedia empire and the works of early animation pioneers like Winsor McCay and Max Fleischer. Does the answer lie in novelty? Spectacle? Or is it just an opportunity to milk pre-existing material for profits? No. The launch is heavily dependent on catering to baby boomer nostalgia. Go figure. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Just like how millennials and Gen Zers have nostalgia for the 1990s and 2000s now, 20 years removed, our parents and grandparents tuned into the Cartoon Network because it showcased familiar and comforting content. Content they absorbed into their little eyeballs from their days of youth. Most of these acquired cartoons stemmed from other libraries of the 30s to the 60s, including collections from Warner Brothers and RKO companies, which are mostly responsible for Looney Tunes. Max Fleischer, who's known for Popeye, United Artists, which think Gerald McBoing-Boing and the like, and Hanna-Barbera, which is home of Fred Flintstone and Pals. With the older audience hooked, line and sinker, there was still a dilemma of attracting kids to the channel. There was still one piece missing. Studies were done to see when they would be most attracted to TV, and Turner found that while competitors often aired cartoons early in the morning and later in the afternoon to cater to kids before and after school, there was still a large time slot not being taken advantage of that kids were still hungry for. Believe it or not, it was the 8 to 10 p.m. slot before bed. I mean, after all, Nicktoons were new and exciting and gobbling up viewer eyeballs at a breakneck pace, especially when their Saturday night SNICK block filled this void this year. So how can Cartoon Network compete with that? Well, without original cartoon content, the higher ups had to think outside the box in terms of rebranding, repurposing, and remixing these tunes of yesteryear in order to gain some much-needed momentum to survive. According to Mike Lazo, mastermind behind the promotional material before moving up in Cartoon Network, he mentioned the process of putting a fresh coat of paint on these tired tunes like this in an IGN interview. We would sit around every day, in essence, because we were just rerunning cartoons. That wasn't that hard to do. I mean, you just said, yeah, air that one again. So every afternoon, we'd gather around a table and say, how can we recontextualize these things? We just did all kinds of crazy stuff. Laszlo further adds how, in one instance, he and his crew pondered whether Dino from the Flintstones was either a dog or a dinosaur. Was he both? And by posing that question to the audience in the form of a commercial to get them to think, they were able to engage them more deeply with their channel. Clearly, this steered the channel in a productive direction, as their ratings revealed a healthy 2 million viewers upon the premiere of Droopy's Guide to the Cartoon Network and spanning into the rest of 1992. By the way, Droopy's Guide to the Cartoon Network is an introductory summary of all the tunes they had to offer, beginning with the iconic Bugs Bunny cartoon, Rhapsody Rabbit, one of my personal favorites. If you'd like to watch the premiere programming block in detail, it's actually currently available on YouTube, courtesy of the channel The Cartoon Cartoon Show, which has similar content to what this will offer. Now go ask your cable provider with your parents' permission to see if we can get Cartoon Network on our TV. I know I did back in the day. So there isn't too much more memories and information to cover for the year 1992 itself, because it was just essentially launching the channel. I will share some of my memories of it, and frankly, I don't have too many of that date, to be honest. I mean, it's been over three decades since its initial premiere, and all I remember are the promos and magazines here and there mentioning the Cartoon Network. Lots of ones featuring Bugs, Daffy, Droopy, you know, typical stuff. My mother actually got me into Looney Tunes at a young age, and considering the classic cartoons also had a home on Nickelodeon in the late 80s to early 90s, I couldn't exactly keep track of what channel they were airing on. I just knew that they were on TV, and I craved to see them. I believe I saw the checkered background with the enthusiastic announcer mentioning Bugs and Daffy programming block on Cartoon Network in a TBS Superstation commercial. But don't quote me on that. It's been a long time since, and I've seen a lot of TV in between that time. So, with everything being said, and after giving a brief overview of the year 1992 as the starting point of Cartoon Network's vast history, why does it even matter that we know about it? Well, if the launch had been forgotten by most, save for a few fellow animation diehards like me and others online, it's still worth noting that every creation has to start somewhere. After all, many of us may remember our birth, and those faint memories help us to zoom out to see where we came from and how we got to where we are today. Pop culture media is no different. The launch event, led by Turner, Cohen, and Lazo, was a true sight to behold, as it was flooded with mascots on stage as a checkered flag with the original logo fluttered with pride in the Atlanta breeze. If this channel had never existed, and Ted Turner had sold his animation collection without being utilized the way it was, or heck, if the collection was even destroyed and thrown out because it wasn't deemed useful, who knows how different the landscape of modern cartoon entertainment would be. It's a lot of food for thought. Well, I think we're going to wrap things up here for our premiere episode of Checkered Childhood. But before we go, let me ask you a question, fellow Toonhead. What was your favorite programming block in 1992 on Cartoon Network, and why? Was it any of the ones I mentioned, or do you remember one that hasn't been covered on this episode? Send me an email to let me know your thoughts at checkeredchildhood@gmail.com. Pretty straightforward. If you're listening to this on a podcast app, feel free to rate and review this Checkered Childhood podcast on Spotify or wherever else it shows up on your preferred podcast platforms. Additionally, if you happen to be listening to this on YouTube, drop a comment below and subscribe to help grow this channel. I'd love to interact with you a little bit more. Well, with all that said, I'm going to go consult my TV guide to see what's on next. I think I foresee a variety show that's created by a Nickelodeon / MTV creative. Huh. That's strange. But then again, a 24-hour cartoon channel piecemealed from various cartoons of our parents' youth is kind of strange too. Tune into episode 2 next time to find out which show I'll be diving into with a rousing retrospective. It was pretty fun to share these Checkered Childhood memories with you today, even for a brief moment. I appreciate your willingness to listen to this little show of mine covering an expansive history filled with joy, wonder, and of course, cartoons. I hope, like best friends, we'll meet up again soon to reminisce and talk more about Classic Cartoon Network. Have a loony toony day! Later, Toonheads!